Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Chiefs Kingdom, you gotta fight for your right.
And now, from the IMLD home studios, in its 11th season, you are listening to, in much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Now your hosts, Jay and Bray.
Hello, hello, everyone. Hopefully you're all recovered from your Thanksgiving stuffing and you're here later than normal, but ready to rock with your guys. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast, here with you live on a Friday night, November the 24th, 2023. I'm Dre. He's Jay. It's an extra late holiday football party. And it's a very special football party for me as I am coming to you live almost from Chicago, from just outside Chicago at my uncle's house, the Black House Hunters. And I'm so happy to be here. I've had a great time with my family all week, this Thanksgiving week. And we'll finish it off tomorrow before I go back home to Memphis on Sunday. Jay, how's your Thanksgiving week been?
Good, good. Thanksgiving, my favorite holiday. No gifts have to be given. Just all about spending time with your family. It's my favorite of the holiday meals. And we got to watch football all day with varying degrees of quality, but it was still a full Thanksgiving. And today's Black Friday. It's my longest work day of the year, but I'm here. I'm surprisingly not, you know, completely in the tank either, which I expected to be, but I'm not. So I'm ready to go. I've got all my notes, all my awards, all my picks. I texted you before the show that I was marveling at all these. We basically have almost an entire week of pick'em spreads. Yeah. And, boy, you know, we traded some really cheap covers against each other last week.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did. We each got one over on the other. And it looks like this might be an entire weekend full of that if it keeps the way it's looking.
Right. It's going to be one of those weeks where there's no clear-cut games that you go, oh, yeah, that should be a slam dunk. I mean, I don't think there is. There's a few that I think are going to be blowouts, but that doesn't mean they will be. And it's not any of the one big spread. That's not the one I think is going to be a blowout as some of the others. But, yeah, you're already looking ahead to the – rest of week 12, where there's one game with a spread over three and a half. All the other ones are 3.5 and under. Yeah.
Which is exactly why I burned up my lock today.
Good move. I should have done it yesterday.
I know. I was kicking myself for not doing it yesterday. And today I, you know, used up my lock with the Dolphins. And thank God that came home. I mean... So I got that up all of our picks so far for the week because we're four games in. And, you know, and all of our picks were up on Twitter, so we cannot claim to have made our picks in absentia.
I forgot there was a Black Friday game. Let me make that pick right now. Dolphins.
Wait, look at that. We both went 4-0. No. We actually,
I had the Dolphins all the way, really.
2-2. We did the Chuck Woolery this weekend.
So far. Did the Bill Alfonso with the two Thanksgiving Day games and the three Thanksgiving Day games and the Black Friday game, we split them right down.
Hey, it was right down the middle, Daddy.
But that's week 12. We're already getting ahead of ourselves. We have to give our awards for week 11. We have to go back last weekend and properly identify those who did good and those who did not so good in week 11. I was a game behind Jay in week 11. We both were over 500, so that's good. I was 7-6. Jay was 8-5. We had a push in there. That's our sixth push of the year, actually. For the season, I battled back to 500. I'm just bouncing back and forth between 500 now, I guess. We'll see how long I can keep that up all year. But I'm at 79-79-6. Jay is seven games off at 72-86-6. But by virtue of winning week 11, Jay gets the honors of letting everybody know what, Jay, was the best to you of week 11.
Clawing my way back is the way I look at it.
Niagara Falls. Slowly, I turn. I'm obviously delirious today.
Yeah, it's been a long day. I get yes. that. Is this going to be? And we don't have a lot of picks, so this might be one of those shows. But that's we love this. You know, every show's got its own flavor. Hey, speaking of clawing my way back, I'm giving my best of the week to the two big bounce backs, the two teams that needed big bounce backs after looking a little lost, a little left for dead. Granted, they beat up on inferior opponents, but there's no gimmies in the league. You still got to show up and win the game. And I'm going to give my bounce backs and best of the week to the Buffalo Bills and the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Okay.
Who do you think you are? I am.
Start with the Bills, who just absolutely laid waste. I did not see this happening. I believe I locked up the Jets. It was one of your locks, basically. I used up last week.
You're trying to go against the Bills and then use the reverse psychology.
I did. And, the reverse psychology worked because, like I said, the heart wanted the Bills. And, well, the brain should have wanted them, too. They looked really good. And you know, it just makes you feel sorry, especially after seeing the game today. You just got to just feel sorry for that Jets defense because that offense just keeps putting them in so many bad spots. And you know that defense was eventually going to just start to crack and break. And we saw that first last week with the Bills, who just absolutely put one up on the Jets. Josh Allen refrains from throwing three arm punts to the same guy, goes 275 and three touchdowns. They don't look completely dead and lifeless in the running game. We had called out James Cook. Maybe he heard and he got the memo. But he showed up and had a great game, and the Bills' defense just completely smothered Wilson, Breece Hall, that Jets, quote-unquote, offense, completely smothered them. Got Zach Wilson benched and demoted to third string for the big spark plug, Tim Boyle. We'll talk about that next week, I'm sure. And then the Jaguars, coming off an extremely ugly loss, get a nice bounce-back spot here. We both saw coming, and we both took the Jags. And they completely, you know, brought the lumber to Tennessee, going up 27-0 at one point in that game before the Titans started doing a little Dak time and scoring late. But Trevor Lawrence had a great game. Calvin Ridley, his best game since week one. They didn't need to do a lot on the ground. It was the Trevor Lawrence show, and they held down the Titans, didn't let them run at all. Derrick Henry, is Derrick Henry looking a little, dare I say, washed?
Yeah, unfortunately, and I love him,
sad.
But yeah, he's lost his stuff.
It's sad. Nobody likes to see it, but you know the way it goes with these big backs. It ends fast, but two of the top teams, or should be the top teams in the AFC, especially Buffalo, who's been so disappointing, showing up in pretty much a must-win spot, not just winning, but doing what we said that they needed to do, right? They didn't just go out there and eke out a win. Both of these teams went out there and asserted their dominance over the other team. So that's better for football, especially when the Bills are good right now, because they're too talented to be this bad. And the Jaguars, just because somebody's got to win that AFC South. And if the Jags don't watch themselves, it might be Houston.
They do, yeah. Very well might be.
So those are my best of the week.
Well, we were all over the Jags bounce back after the Niners burned them the week before, and the Titans were just no contest. Will Levis overmatched early, so that was definitely an easy win for us. I did not give the Bills an award at all this week. Good job. You got one. Good on you. They were motivated. Simple as that. They finally,
they
finally found the magic button to get motivated and play the way they're supposed to play. I guess firing the OC was the last straw. Whether it's the previous Jets loss, shit getting the OC, everyone laughing at them. They finally were motivated to play a high quality game on offense and defense. They actually lived up to their hype for one game. Good for them. Tim Boyle was a joke as a Zach Wilson replacement. I picked him anyway today. We won't dwell on today.
Well, you tried to crap on my lock and it did not work out.
No, did not at all. Well, I didn't know it was going to be your lock when I made that pick. Believe me. That was the rare time where I made my Twitter pick before you made yours.
Right.
So,
okay.
And then you came back and that's my lock. And I was like, oh wow. You really believe in the fish. Okay. Well, and it worked. So my best of week 11.
Who do you think you are? I am.
I'm going soft. I get the best thing to me, DTR, FTW, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I'm just happy for a quality performance out of a quarterback that's not one of the elite guys. And it wasn't even that quality. Yeah, let me not oversell it. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
It was emotional. It was great to see the kid feeling like he did something. You could tell the stress of doing so terrible in his first start was weighing on him, and he was able to do better, not much better, but better, and lead his team to a W. You could tell he felt like he might never get a W in the NFL as bad as he played that first time. Just think of the doubt and the hate and the thought process that he had to have, had to be going through getting the start over P.J. Walker after Deshaun Watson got shelved. Everyone, why him? He was so bad his first start. And I contributed to that. I contributed to that doubt, but we picked him. We got it right.
We did.
Believed in DTR, and he got it done. And it felt dirty as hell to take him, but we did it, and he beats the Steelers. I don't know how, he was in tears. He clearly didn't expect to win the game. The number one defense in the league, the Cleveland Browns, they come through once again. And DTR, .165 and an interception, but with 20 rushing yards. I mean, yeah, it wasn't pretty at all. But, again, I'm just happy because the first start that he made, it seemed like he would never win a game ever. Like he would, the way Tim Boyle played today, it looked like that. Like he's never going to ever get a W at all. But he got it. It was a little bit of a throwback to, you know, why they play the game and the guys that really love the game, that really love – you could tell it really mattered to him. It was kind of touching to see. I'm a softy. So in this Thanksgiving week where you're talking about family and you know, thinking about what's important and things like that, DTR touched me. So I'm giving him my best of the week.
All right. That's good because that's probably not a spot we're going to a lot.
No.
So for a week 11 recap, it's perfect. You know, like I said, in the last show, we're in those dog days now. And it's not so obvious every week what's always going to be the best of the week. And I appreciated their move of starting him. I thought that he was the sneakier play over P.J. Walker, and that turned out to be the case. They never needed to go to the bullpen because the defense kept them in that game and just completely dominated the Steelers. So they didn't need a lot from DTR. If they did, things might have been a little different. So that's sometimes what you need. When you have a top – look at the Jets should be watching this, right?
Right.
When you have a top defense, you just need somebody to go out there and just not be awful at football.
Right, don't burn out the possession and get the defense right back on the field when they're tired.
Right.
Because eventually, no matter how great they are, they're going to wear out.
Exactly. And did he have a by any metric a great game? No, but he did enough. Didn't put his team in bad spots. You know, wasn't out there flipping the field constantly. You know, like that game we saw today, or a lot of the games we've seen this year. But for a team like Cleveland, who's clearly without their starting quarterback now, and they're hurting, to go out there and get that win, that was a gutty win in the division. They needed it. The Steelers, ironically, outgained them Isn't that the ultimate irony?
Yeah, how about
the Steelers? The Steelers finally outgain somebody and lose.
And get the L.
A little poetic justice there
exactly.
for Pittsburgh.
All those games where they get outgained and find all these W's
yeah.
somehow. And yeah, this one they get the L.
outgain somebody and lose.
So that touched me. I don't know why, but that got me in the feels. So your worst of week 11.
Well, I'll tell you, but speaking of touching, my worst of the week has got to be Kareem Jackson. What a way to celebrate your return from a suspension for headhunting by immediately headhunting and trying to KTFO Josh Dobbs on a play. That, I mean, you can't watch the play where he basically dives crown of his helmet first into Josh Dobbs' sternum and not think it's dirty. Somehow it managed to not get flagged. And there was another hit later in the game by a different guy on Alexander Mattison that also didn't get flagged that looked shady as heck. And I'm not one of these throw the flag guys, but for a league that puts so much on player safety, watching dudes just flying around with the crown of their helmet squarely into defenseless runners, not a good look. And Kareem Jackson, yeah, celebrates his return by immediately getting suspended again. And
all the referees were thinking about their Thanksgiving plans. They just missed it. They just kept missing it. Oh, we were distracted.
They held on to their flags for hits like that. He's fined. He's suspended. But yet somehow we managed to not get a penalty called in these spots. That could have been a huge penalty in that game because that actually would have overturned a Josh Dobbs fumble. Early in that game, because he was being stripped as he was being speared in the sternum by Kareem Jackson, and the league took action immediately and suspended him for another two games. So that'll be six out of the last seven, and that's not a reputation you want. Especially doesn't help when Sean Payton's your coach. Just saying.
No bounty out there, you're saying?
I'm just saying. That's not a good look, and to have that happen twice in one game, but definitely the Jackson one being the most egregious, you got to be a lot smarter. I mean, he was, I believe, suspended or heavily penalized after what was that the KTFO hit on Logan Thomas in that Washington game early in the season. He had another hit. I think that was the one later on that ended up getting him the four gamer. And now he comes back and immediately, and this is the first drive that he took out. Like, I'm back and I'll show you guys. And he goes out and does the exact same thing that got him suspended and gets him suspended again. That to me is the worst of the week.
That's pretty bad. That's the, basically he was the hockey goon that gets the 5-minute major. And I'm going to screw that up. the late, great Bob Probert. I was going to screw that up because I don't know hockey rules enough. I think 5-minute major is you're gone for the game. I don't know what the five out of 5 minute goes in. So I'll revise that. He gets the 2-minute headhunting penalty. And as soon as they open the box to let him out, he goes, I'm out. Let me go get somebody else. Let me get some more. And you don't learn the lesson. Clearly you did not learn. The punishment did not make you think about what you did, and you went right back out and did it again. So now he has to go get suspended and think about it some more. So maybe this time it'll take. I doubt it, but I think that's just who he is as a player, unfortunately. So they're getting those guys more and more out of the game. It's actually pretty rare to see the Kareem Jackson types out there. There used to be one of those every team back when we were growing up and watching football. But definitely rare now. That was my first time in a while watching that Denver pass coverage, and oh my God, are they clueless. Holy, they don't know what they're doing out there. I mean, the Vikings weren't even getting challenged in that game until the Alexander Mattison fumble in the third quarter. And that led to a field goal, and then old Forrest Gump let one slip for an INT. That was another field goal, and then they were in trouble. Corlin Sutton goes up and makes a play, and I mean a hell of a play for the win, so. They pulled that one out by the skin of their teeth, but that dirty play from Kareem Jackson. Yeah, if they flagged that, that might turn the whole fortunes around. So you never know. That gets to my worst of the week, and got some guys coming in and out. That happens. In a league full of bad football, the Carolina Panthers stood out to me as the worst of week 11, I should say. Why is Bryce Young's processing still so slow? He does not see the edges coming around him to come sack him. He doesn't see it coming up the middle in his face. He doesn't move his ass when the pressure gets near. It's half a season now, dude. This is the point of playing as a rookie that you're supposed to be able to get the speed of the game and figure out these things as the season goes on. And now we're, halfway through the season. At this point, you should have shown some ability to process and figure out what's coming before it gets there. He still hasn't figured it out. And it's week 11 in the NFL. I don't think it's going to happen this year. I don't know if it's going to happen for his career. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But it certainly hasn't happened yet. I mean, that was some horrible football by the Carolina Panthers as they get destroyed by the Cowboys. Some horrible discipline by Carolina. That usually it's the Cowboys that have the bad discipline with the stupid penalties, but this time Carolina just kept giving the Cowboys on third down, they getting off the field, but oops, there's a flag for a face mask or a personal foul for roughing the quarterback. They're the ones that kept the Cowboys on the field. And then the Panthers finally put together a long 9-minute drive, this large, extra large drive, where they get a bunch of fourth down conversions and they get a touchdown to get within 7. And I was like, ooh, hey, there's a chance here. Nope. Dallas answers with a touchdown. Then first throw, Bryce Young gets the next possession. Up, nope. Another Deron Bland pick six. I guess he's the big man as far as getting the pick sixes for the Cowboys now, and the route was on. But that was my worst to me. It's trying to watch Bryce Young. I got a big eye full of Bryce Young with the Cowboys and the Panthers, and I did not like what I see because he doesn't seem to have gotten any better at all.
Well, yeah, it's the worst team and the worst of the week. That makes sense because they are
wraps it all up.
All worst.
They've earned it. They have definitely earned that. That takes us to your smartest of week 11.
I'm giving this one to Tom Brady for a couple of reasons. Hmm. I don't know if you saw his interview that he gave this last week.
Unaware of the comments of Tom Brady.
Tom Brady was talking about this is the best because it's smart, but it's also a glaring lack of self-awareness. But he was on Stephen A. Smith's show, a YouTube show, and talked about all the mediocrity that there is now in the NFL. And he was talking about all these the offensive players need to protect themselves more, that the defense, it's not their job as much to worry about protecting the offense. And then he talked about the softness of the league and all the penalties, which to me showed – at that point, a extreme lack of self-awareness because it was the softness of the league when it comes to DPI calls on Tom Brady arm punts or chest chops that are called blows to the head. I mean, so he benefited from a lot of the penalties and the officiating that he was complaining about. But here's why I'm saying this is all smart, because he waited until he was retired to call out all this stuff. And that's smart. Because he said what he really felt about the softness of the league and that there's too many flags, about the sports being basically the footballs being coached and officiated out of football, and it's not the same game anymore. And he was around for 20-plus years, so he's it was way different when he came in to way it ended, but he was also a big beneficiary, so a little hypocritical, but also very smart that he waited until at least he was retired before he started taking on the league for its quote-unquote softness.
That's impressive lack of self-awareness on Tom Brady's part for of all people, for him to sit up there and try to call the league soft.
Yeah,
some of the lovingly grazing his helmet penalties that he was beneficiary of that were called personal fouls.
Or the horrible arm punt underthrows that turned into DPIs. Yeah.
That became a strategy. That's a play.
That's an offensive play for his last four or five seasons.
We're in deep trouble. It's 3rd and 18. I'm going to throw this thing way short, and you're just going to run into the DB and draw a flag, and that's going to be our play. And it worked.
Yeah.
That's incredible that he would call those leaks off after some of the calls. Wow.
So while there's truth and intelligence in what he's saying, I also do have to point out, because I got to take a shot at Tom Brady.
Of course.
Major lack of self-awareness with those comments.
Wow, that's kind of breathtaking.
But he's not wrong.
He's definitely the wrong messenger. He may not be wrong, but that's definitely
correct.
The wrong guy to say
right.
it.
Right. he may have, you know, been one of the biggest beneficiaries of all of these things, but that's not to say it's wrong. And he's not, you know, and saying that the product is taking a hit. So the GOAT, the quote unquote, the GOAT is talking about the drop in quality of the brand. You know, he said the rules have allowed a lot of bad habits to get in the actual performance of the game. So I think the product, in my opinion, is less than what it's been. What sounds like, in different words, what you and I have been saying on the show for the last few seasons.
Sure. And again, he's not wrong. He's just the wrong guy to say that. That's just
like Jose Canseco.
And he's going to write a new book called Juiced. That's pretty breathtaking right there. My smartest of week 11, I said that the genius architect of offense, Brian Daboll, was allowed to coach up Danny DeVito anytime he wanted. And it all came together, finally, in Washington. 18 of 26 for 246 and 3 touchdowns out of that guy. After what we saw the first time he played, that guy, that was impressive. Way to go, kid. And the Giants beat down the Skins 31-19. I'm giving Daboll smartest just because I knew he could coach DeVito to do more than just check down, swing pass, throw to the flat, check down, screen, check down. And he broke through big time this week. So good on him. Good on DeVito. I don't know anything about his playing. I never saw him in college or anything like that, so I didn't know if he had this in him ever. And he had it in him. He brought it out. Now, maybe that's part of why Jack Del Rio winds up getting canned by the Skins eventually. This is not a good Thanksgiving season for certain assistant coaches, one of which I mentioned in the title of the show. But that's another one. Jack Del Rio of the Washington team Manderskins winds up getting canned after the Thursday Thanksgiving debacle against the Cowboys. But it started out. It was a two-punch knockout. Maybe the first punch was the fact that they let Danny DeVito go out there and look like not just a good NFL quarterback, but like a superstar one. That was a great game that DeVito had. So Brian Daboll, smartest of the week.
I have some other things to say about that game, but not on this award.
Okay, that leaves you to give your Homer Simpson, your dumbest of week 11.
I'm giving this to my favorite coach in the NFL.
Your guy. You
stupidest of the week, who I'm now going to call the Salty Balls of Staley.
He was very salty.
Very salty. So if you caught any of the post-game press conference after the Chargers lost at Lambeau, Brandon Staley was getting called out for his defensive play calling and was asked if he was going to continue to call the defense, and decided to try to tear the interviewer a new one, and just I'm going to put an end to this right now, and basically just says, you know, yes, I'm going to be calling the plays, and you guys just need to stop asking me about this. So a little defensive, little red ass, not a good look, especially the way your team has played. You're supposed to be a defensive coach. You know, that's what you're known for. And you're wasting all these great years with Justin Herbert by not coaching good defense. Maybe you should, you know, not be so salty when people ask you about that, because you're the one making this happen. The Chargers just find so many ways to lose close games. They invented another one here. And things just aren't looking good for them, and their defense keeps getting gashed. And so not only is he kind of an idiot when it comes to his play calling and his situational game management, turns out when you call him out on it, he's salty too. So now it's the salty balls daily.
and the dumb balls. I'll expand just a little more on that in one of my later awards.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we'll cover that a little more of that. Yeah, I definitely was aware of all of that. So my dumbest of the week. So it took Matt Canada this long to give Jaylen Warren the ball more, and his 9 carries for a 129 and a score comes out to 14.3 yards per carry. That's a hell of a running average there. Why the hell did Najee Harris still have more carries? What are we doing? What? This is why, go Canada. This is why they fired him. Why are we still running through Najee Harris when he has proven that he is not the guy that's going to jumpstart this offense? Matt Canada just stayed married to what he thought was the right way to run the Steelers offense, would not change. You know it's got to be a big deal for Mike Tomlin to change and fire a coach in the middle of the season. He doesn't do that. The Steelers as an organization don't ever do that. You know it's got to be a big deal if it came to that. Najee Harris, by the way, 12 carries for 35 yards.
Yeah.
That's a 2.9 average. Anybody knows that you want to give the ball to the guy averaging 14.3 over the guy averaging 2.9. That's just elementary, rudimentary, as basic as it possibly gets. The Steelers could not keep winning games with that crap offense, and they didn't win. And finally, Mike Tomlin has to listen to the Pittsburgh fans and the media and probably the players who wanted to sing Go Canada, and they all got to finally sing it as they finally get rid of the offensive coordinator, the much maligned offensive coordinator. But that's a perfect example. That's a great last game to go out for somebody to just look at that sheet and see how many more yards per carry that Jaylen Warren is getting. Yeah, we're going to give Najee Harris the ball more. Just not very smart at all, and a major contributor as to why he is currently unemployed.
Well, and even if you take out that 74-yard touchdown run, he still had 8 carries for 55 yards, which is still almost 7 yards per carry. Even if you take the best one off the top, he's still averaging – almost triple what Najee Harris was averaging. And he's clear. We talked about this in the last couple of shows that they seem to be giving him the ball more and he seems to be the guy, but that stubbornness, right? It can't win out. And it didn't. and Matt Canada just reluctance to use those playmakers. We've seen these teams, several of them. We saw one today who just look like they're setting football back. this isn't the 1970s, and we're seeing some 1970s offense from some of these teams. It's so bad.
Take the numbers out and use your eyes. And we've been talking about that the last few weeks. Jaylen Warren is clearly the more explosive offensive threat than Najee Harris. Clearly. And he just refused to acknowledge that and make the change. And finally, Tomlin had to let him go. So, yeah, if you're going to set football back, we certainly talked about this over the years here, a very common theme on the show. If you're going to set football back and try to go 3 yards in a cloud of dust, you better have the type of running game that's going to reward you for setting it back, like the Titans and Derrick Henry all these years.
Right.
They could do that. All these other teams trying to set it back, they can't do that. They don't have the horses, so they need to just stop. So what's your surprise of week 11?
My surprise of the week is you talked about your boy Danny DeVito. None of that happens if we don't have the Washington team Manderskins turning the ball over six times.
Hey, what happened?
And that, yeah, they could have played that after every single turnover. Sam Howell was a human turnover machine in that game. And to that point, he had been the leading passer in the league. But they gave Washington, I believe that it was 24 points off of turnovers in that game.
Damn.
And, yeah, Danny DeVito played a hell of a game. That's easy to do when you always have the ball, because the other team just could not hang on to it. And that to me was a surprise. I did not expect the Washington team Manderskins to be so loose with the football. And to basically at home just completely disintegrate right before your eyes that way, especially against a team as bad as the Giants, and as bad as they'd looked the previous couple of weeks. You give a team that many chances, they're going to score. So
what the hell's going on out here?
Yeah, there were pick sixes, there were multiple fumbles, three picks. Not a very good look for Washington. So what do you do after you turn the ball over six times and then you get beat? You fire your defensive coach.
It's all your fault, DeRio. Get out of here. They had enough on defense to fire him. It was everybody's
fault. No,
their
defense was – we talked about that defense, especially how bad they are back end and over the top. And, you know, they're filling a lot of people's pockets if you're picking against – if you're taking wide receivers in some daily fantasy against Washington, that's been almost a slam dunk play all season long. And the Giants even proved that.
Right, with Danny DeVito. Lighten it up.
I mean, yeah, so it's great for Danny DeVito, but taking advantage of Washington, especially after they turn over the ball six times, it's not that tall of a task.
Well,
I kind of feel like you do about them is like you kind of felt about the Bills. Like, okay, yeah, you got one. That was nice. It's kind of how I feel
about
the Giants.
Show me again.
The Giants got one, but yeah. I don't know if they got one or they were given one. I'm starting to My take on that is more that they were given one.
Kind of both. He went out and made those throws and completed them and they took it in that respect, but also a lot of gifts, a lot of early Christmas gifts by
some early presents. That's right.
Yeah, definitely.
Culver wasn't even in the building.
Santa Sam Howell, ladies and gentlemen. My surprise for week 11, I will use this section to give props to two quarterbacks who found a way to win despite throwing three INTs. Sam Howell didn't get the win. He's not one of them. CJ Stroud and Jared Goff, you certainly don't see that often in the NFL, but they both had to get over the bad throws and keep firing to get those Ws, and that was my surprise. That you just don't see guys throw three INTs and win the game, and it happened twice. I don't know exactly how, but CJ Stroud gets over Arizona despite the throw. But this is why Stroud is not the MVP. Three INTs, and some of them are really bad. All right. Great. He made the comeback. He got the win, but you don't get MVP by setting your own fire and then putting it out. That's you don't get fireman of the year by being an arsonist. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. Just a turnover fest of a game there. His TD to Tank Dell was awesome. All right, I admit that. But both those teams are very flawed, the Cardinals and the Texans. And Houston kind of winds up getting the win, not necessarily taking it or earning it. And I don't believe they covered the spread in that one either.
No, I got another Kyler cover.
You sure did. You and your Kyler Murray, you're two for two with Kyler, him and his little feet. So good on Trout for finding a way to come back. I don't think that makes him an MVP candidate, but that's just me. And then how the hell did the Chicago manage to blow that game in Detroit? That was a 12-point lead.
Only the Bears.
Oh, my God. 12-point lead with 5 minutes to go, and you lose Jared Goff and the Lions. You can't blow the good Justin Fields games. He came back very first game off of injury and had a hell of a performance, and Goff was awful. But
yeah,
because Detroit hung around, Goff was able to put it together late with those two touchdowns. Amazing comeback by the Lions, but more so a blowing of the game by the Bears.
Yeah.
But I still give the props and the surprise of the week to Stroud and Goff throwing three INTs and still managing to hang in there and get the victory at the end.
Yeah, and Justin Fields comes back. Must have watched all that Tyson Bagent film.
Yeah, inspired.
That touchdown throw he made to DJ, that was a big boy throw.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why you don't ever put out memes about how many wins he has versus Tyson Bagent. This loss is not on Fields.
Oh, no.
Even when he got the jailbreak sack safety at the end of the game, although I bet you and I were both hoping that the Lions fell on that one in the end zone. But, you know, just saying.
Yeah.
A lot of people who had Lions cover were not hoping for the Bears player to kick the ball out of the back of the end zone. But that had nothing to do with the win or the loss there. The game was
– if I had money on the Bears, the Lions would have fell on it, trust me. Believe me.
So, wasn't enough, but I was impressed. I was impressed with Fields coming back. They stuck it to the Lions. Lions showing some cracks. We saw that again on Thanksgiving. So we'll see how that goes. They're going through their little mid-season, pieces of confidence. But good for them in that spot. That spot they were able to come back all the way.
So leads you to your letdown. Who let you down in Week 11?
I'll tell you who was letting me down. I'm going back to Thursday night, the far past, to talk about the Joe Burrow and Mark Andrews losses. And that's just that's just a letdown. I mean, it's so long ago, it feels like easy to forget. But it was just 8 days ago, the Baltimore Ravens went in against Cincinnati, and again, competitive game, two top teams, Bengals are coming back. They've won a couple after that awful start, and wouldn't you know, we lose Joe Burrow for the season. And then not much longer later in the game, we lose Mark Andrews for the season. And it's just, these top teams, these top quarterbacks, these top playmakers, and every time you lose one of these guys this season, just keeps feeling like it's a hit. That's why I was joking about, who are we going to lose on Monday night? Thankfully we didn't lose anybody on Monday Night Football. All those top playmakers managed to stay healthy and in the rain.
Yeah.
But that's what let me down, is that we're now going to get to watch the Bengals sort of, most likely just kind of fade into obscurity here. We'll get some big Jake Browning feels.
Remember, too many good teams in the AFC.
Whoever the hell that guy is, Ravens. Yeah. We get to watch a lot of Isaiah Likely now the rest of the way.
Yeah.
At tight end, and then Lamar kind of loses his safety blanket, what had been a high flying, extremely improved offense. But that's every week. We could have this just be let down of the week every week, is just list off the guys that we're not going to get to see play football anymore this season.
Right, who's the latest big star that goes down for the season every week?
That was two in one game.
Right.
Yeah.
With the tight end being totally obscured, as we talked about, once the Joe Burrow injury happened,
right,
you almost forgot that Mark Andrews got hurt too, and taken. Although they're trying to play like that's not for the year now, they're trying to almost call him week to week a little bit.
But
there's little semantics being played with that. So that might be one of those where he pulls a Willis Reed and limps out there on the field for the first playoff game or something like that, and plays decoy or something.
Plays decoy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we've got 6 weeks left, at least.
The longer than that. Remember, the longest season, tied for the longest season ever.
The longest season, yeah. And if Baltimore somehow manages to secure a home field It could be even longer for them. It could be 8 weeks.
Exactly. So I guess we'll just all have to wait and see. But yes, very disappointing that Joe Burrow situation, and I'll have more on that later on. But before that, you mentioned the other night game or one of the other night games last week, and that's what my letdown is for week 11 was the Monday nighter. The Kansas City Chiefs lost that game. The Eagles did not win it. The Chiefs lost it. The Chiefs gave it to them. They had more yards from scrimmage. They won time of possession. They were up 10 at the half. It was their night. It was their game, and they blew it. I'm sorry. I'm a fan of the Eagles. I respect the Eagles. The Chiefs gave them that game on a rainy Kansas City night. The Chiefs were forced to run the ball on Philadelphia and had way more success at it than I would have expected. I was very impressed that the Chiefs were reacting to the situation in front of them. Okay, we're not going to be able to air it out and throw it all around. Of course, our pass catchers are trash. That would manifest itself at the end. We're just going to try to run the ball and see if that's going to get anywhere, and they had more success doing that. Isaiah Pacheco was doing it, getting it done on the ground, and when Pat Mahomes got comfortable and threw to the end zone, that's when Kevin Byard expertly slid over for the INT. But they still had it in hand because Frank Clark and the KC pressure was smothering the Philadelphia offense. But, man, the lack of chemistry from those receivers and Pat Mahomes, it finally came to light in the second half. They just kept having disconnects. Kelce, big fumble near the goal line. Yeah. Huge, just brutal. The game-winning touchdown drop by Marquez Valdez-Scantling was absolutely brutal. Ball right in his hand. I had this feeling as the ball was coming near his hands that he wasn't going to catch it. I can't explain it, but you can tell when a receiver is sort of – his body is like sort of out of sorts or out of sync. And even though the defender is several yards behind him, there's nothing stopping the guy from catching it. It's not too long. His arms were outstretched, but it wasn't like he was trying to stretch all the way and do Gumby. It was there. It was right in his finger, but there's just something about the way he was – running like he's not going to catch that. As soon as I just saw it right before it hit his hands, I was in my mind. I didn't say it out loud, but in my mind, I'm like, he's not going to catch it. It's wide open. He's not going to catch it. Sure enough, he didn't catch it. KC beat themselves. I'm not going to go on even more about it. I already have, but that let me down. The Chiefs are one of those few teams that are good enough to win when they want, how they want. Pat Mahomes is absolutely putting an MVP season together because the fact that he still got this team third best in passing with one target he can count on, Travis Kelce and nobody else, and those balls that Mahomes is putting out there in the rain, unbelievable performance. And I'm shocked he didn't just tear into his team in the post-game press conference because I would have lit them all a new one, but he's classier than that, I guess. But that was my letdown. The Chiefs absolutely lost that game.
Yeah, I'm glad they did, too.
Because you had the Eagles.
Because I had the Eagles. But, yeah, no, we talked about it's the 17s and the 87, right? That's all it is. It's a wide receiver room of guys. There's zero growth in that wide receiver room. It's not like that's a young core of receivers and you're seeing some steady growth, you know? And you're seeing, and he's gelling with these guys. You're not seeing any of that. And you'd think this far into the season, he'd have some rapport with some of those receivers. I don't see any rapport.
It seemed like the slightest bit of rapport with Rashee Rice, and that's it. And that's why everyone's slobbering over Rashee Rice, is because they don't see anything out of any of the other guys.
He's the only one who's shown any spark.
A hair of connection with Pat Mahomes. Sky Moore, none.
No.
MVS, none.
Darius Toney, no. All these just guys. And so, yeah, so the guy of the, you know, Justin Watson, he shows up in the box score once in a while. It's Travis Kelce and Noah Gray are still, those two tight ends are probably still the guys that Mahomes trusts the most. And it's not pretty. This is, if they win a Super Bowl with this, okay, just put Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, put them just right into the Hall of Fame. because
right, they're already in now. But if they win a title, another title with this crew,
right.
Holy crap!
And they go and they get Mecole Hardman, who's done nothing.
No, they know what he is. That's why they let him go in the first.
So their third best pass receiving option is probably Jerick McKinnon. This is how bad it is. There's no trust.
Yeah.
There's no growth. It's really bad. So I completely agree with you. I didn't think it was a letdown because I won the pick, but it didn't let me down.
Let down by good teams that play badly.
Like the Bills. And, when the Bills were letting us down, they finally won the game they had to win. But now,
I'm not giving them an award for that one. Good. You got one.
Right.
Good job.
Then you go up against the Eagles on Sunday. Okay, maybe.
Yeah. Now we're talking. All right.
Struggling.
Struggling for week 11?
Well, this was a dual struggling, and you talked about one of them. This is the anti-Freddie Mitchell Award. These guys don't want to thank their hands for being so great. And that would be Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Chargers wide receiver Quentin Johnston.
Bad drops
in crunch time. You know, Quentin Johnston with the Chargers drops a wide open. It would have been a nice over the shoulder catch, but it was perfect ball placement by Justin Herbert. Would have caught that in stride right at the spot where they would have been able to kick the game tying field goal. Maybe if he gets a move, he goes to the house. I still think he would have gotten tackled just the way it looked, you know, where he was when he would have caught the ball. There was a defender trailing, but perfect throw by Justin Herbert. And just, couldn't bring it in. No, and again, another rookie wide receiver, and no rapport. So he's got the stone hands, and then, you thought that was bad, and then you get the cherry on top with Marquez Valdez-Scantling, as you talked about, on a wide-open bomb touchdown, hits him in the worst possible spot, right in the hands.
Right in the fingers. Terrible.
And Valdez-Scantling decides to basically, get the ball in his hands, and then when he tries to secure it, bounces it off of his own body.
You can just tell. He was completely out of sorts.
Like, it was just like he was either too wide open or he couldn't believe it. But, in both of those cases, both of those receivers, they get their hands on the ball, perfectly thrown footballs. Mahomes tried to take some credit and be the bigger man and say he could have thrown. No, that was a perfect throw 50 yards down the field, and Herbert's was almost as long, and just huge drops in a season of huge drops. Was that Tyler Boyd the week before for the Bengals? Wide open drop. Nobody
right
around
in the end zone.
Yeah, right in the end zone. Made a huge difference in that game for Cincinnati. And then in this spot, two of them. That game altering drops. And those are some hands that are struggling.
Yeah, now that you mention it, the Chargers do remind me of the Chiefs, that you take out the pass catchers that aren't Keenan Allen that actually know how to catch, and you take them out due to injury. And all the guys left around there are a bunch of Rashee Rices and a bunch of MVSs that just stone hands. All those guys.
Palmer and Johnston and Donald Parham when it's not too cold on the field. all those guys. They're just guys.
There's guys with bad hands. Like, what happened to the receivers that can actually catch? What's going on here?
Yeah,
that
doesn't help if you're open if you can't catch the ball.
That doesn't matter how you are if you can't catch. We learned that in Madden 20 years ago. Doesn't matter how open the guy gets if his hands are 43. No chemistry with Justin Herbert and all those guys. We beat around the Chargers, and you gave your award for Staley, and you bring up Quentin Johnston, and he was struggling. But Staley himself gets my struggling because it feels like some coaches are just primed to be fired as soon as the season ends. And I think Ron Rivera getting rid of Del Rio is a deflector because I think he knows he's next, and Staley clearly shows that he's a dead man walking, and he knows it by his behavior and the reaction that he had as the Chargers fall to Green Bay. His defense stinks. The O is very disappointing. A lot of drops, as you just mentioned. A lot of close losses. They need new leadership badly. You give up 300 yards to Jordan Love. You got to go. I'm sorry. You got to go. Then he has the nerve, as you already pointed out, to get indignant in the press conference with a reporter who's asking if he's going to stop calling plays for that god-awful defense. And he goes, yeah, you can stop asking. We have total confidence in our operation. You can stop asking if I'm turning over play calling duties because I have total confidence. Really? Only the Broncos. Only the Broncos. The only team worse in the league in yards per game are the Denver friggin' Broncos, and you have total confidence in this operation, and you got the nerve to get uppity with the reporter about it. Dude, you are struggling. You are a dead man walking, and you will make a nice D coordinator at some high school somewhere next year.
Yeah, I mean, if you take out the Dolphins' 8,000 yards against the Broncos, the Chargers probably would be worst.
Might be. Might well be.
So, yeah, no, the salty balls of Staley gets dunked on twice on this show. Wow.
Yes. Dumb and struggling. He earned it.
He did.
He absolutely earned that. So, leave your Danielle.
Yeah.
Ah, where's my girl?
We're going into the game 72-71.
I'm going to refer to this news item of the week, and it was the dumbest of the week. And it definitely, when I saw it, it had me, because the fact that it got any media coverage or Twitter coverage or anything at all is a big what the fuck. And that's just what I'm going to call Nacho Gate.
Nacho Gate.
Nacho Gate. Because I really don't care that Tyreek Hill's wife got nachos dumped on her at the Raiders-Dolphins game that she knocked over on herself. And that somehow turned into a media story of people trying to Zapruder film this to figure out whose fault it was for the nachos getting dumped on Tyreek Hill's wife. Come on.
George Clooney. You've been reading about all that? You've been seeing that?
George Clooney.
I'm blissfully unaware of all of this.
Good, good. Go on Twitter and look it up, or go on anywhere and talk about it. You can see the clip of Tyreek Hill's wife reacting to something and putting both of her hands up in the air, and there's a dude standing behind her holding a tray of nachos, and she knocks the nachos over onto herself. And it became this whole big, like, whose fault was it thing. The dude's just standing there holding his nachos. So I'm hoping she bought him more nachos. That's what it should be. But it's never, you know, good luck when, you know, you're a football wife and you're all made up, you know, over made up in the case of most of them. and you're on camera and you're reacting to something. I'm guessing it's something that her husband had just done on the field. And
she excitedly just threw her hands up and knocked the stuff on herself.
Knocked the nachos onto herself.
Ah.
And it turned into a little bit of a, you know, little ex Twitter storm, and you know, it was like a news blurb on the sports websites, and it was so dumb. What the fuck? Nacho Gate.
I only learned from watching the coverage of the game today about his wife at all, the fact that she became his wife about 5.5 minutes ago. Like, that just happened. Yep. Like, they just got married like last week or so.
Yeah.
So whoever that is, number one, good on her. And number two, I guess she doesn't mind about his second career or his desire for his post playing career. Did you ever hear about that?
No.
Some podcast he was doing, Tyreek Hill claimed that in his second career after he's through playing football, he'd like to be a porn star.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Boy, that's just yes, I did hear about that. That was one of those in one ear and out the other, but now that you mention it, yes, I did hear that. I feel bad for the guy who got the nachos dumped out, though, because that was probably like $75.
That was his whole family's dinner for the day because he couldn't afford anything else after getting the nachos.
After getting the tickets to the game and then going to spend $75 on nachos?
And $150 on parking, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was unaware of all of that, so that's something I missed, unfortunately.
Oh, I'll send it to you. I'll send you the clip. You can decide for yourself. You can Zapruder film it and figure out who is to blame in Nachogate.
I'll give all the forensic evidence, and then I'll give it the once-over. Brent, you mentioned that something didn't smell right when Deshaun Watson's shoulder thing went down, and I talked all about that last week. And as we kind of danced around in the last show, something didn't smell right about Joe Burrow's wrist either, because speaking of Zapruder,
How did we forget this one? I'm glad you didn't forget this one.
Oh, I was all over the WTF as soon as you told me about it, which I was blissfully unaware of the Zapruder film from last week when Joe Burrow came into the Thursday Nighter at Baltimore getting off the plane wearing some sort of splint on his throwing wrist, but there wasn't a mention at all on any injury reports about that. And he looks okay his first bunch of throws, but that last throw he made, the 17th throw of the game, a touchdown to Joe Mixon, he can't celebrate it because the pain shooting through his wrist was obvious, and man, was he in pain. And he tries to throw on the sideline, couldn't grip the ball, turned out to be a torn ligament, season over for Joe Burrow. Feel awful for him, of course, feel awful for the Bengals, but what the fuck? How long did they think they could hide such an injury without anybody knowing or finding out about it? Now, to be fair to their side of the story, the Bengals, they say the splint was something he normally does when traveling, and the torn ligament was unrelated. It just happened, something that happened to happen during the game. That's their word. That's what they say. Come on. They kind of have to say that. They can't say what really was going on there. But, yeah, that's my WTF. Like, you can't get away with something like that. And it was, as you told me, you're the one that's got the more details on this than I do. It was the team that posted that, that put that film up to begin with.
And then yanked it.
And then pulled it all.
People caught wind of the fact that if you looked at it, you know, in the grainy footage, another Zapruder film.
Guys,
I think he's.
You want to take that film down?
And then they tried to say that it was some special compression sleeve that they wear because they get swollen on airplanes. It was so fabricated and made up. Yeah. That was some White House briefing room level spin, just made up nonsense that you could come up with on that one. Or then they were trying to say, no, it was it's one of those gloves, like stylus gloves that you would know, because that wraps over your fingers.
Yeah, and they had every excuse you could figure out there.
But again, the fact that, you just so happened to tear the ligaments in the wrist that you were wearing a brace on when you got the, I don't think so.
And if it's legit and all those other excuses are legit, then you don't take the film down.
Correct. That's why when I talked about it last week. If there's no there, then just leave it up.
Exactly. So that's my WTF. Something didn't smell right.
That's the one I forgot about.
Just add that to the pile. Deshaun Watson's shoulder didn't smell right. Joe Burrow's wrist. Again, like you said, it's interesting. The league seems to be sort of squirrely and hiding injuries. Who would have thought, right?
Right. Yeah. No. It's Tyreek's back. It's just Tyreek. Tua's back. It's his back.
Oh, Tua's concussed back.
And Joe Burrow, he played just fine. And then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, he's wincing in pain as he's doing the towel drill, basically, over on the side. Yeah, him and Mark Pryor were doing the towel drill, you know.
Poor Mark Pryor. everybody wears a splint on their wrist getting off the plane. That's normal.
Yeah.
By the way, you will never see that film again because we tried to scrub it and erase it from
It's been
memories.
Scrubbed from history. It's been completely memory-holed, yeah.
You got the men in black stick waving it across. You don't, what splint? You don't know what you're talking about. There is no splint. What do you mean?
Playing the game 72-71.
Oh, did you do your Daniel?
Yes, I did.
You did yours first. It's
yes,
late.
I
apologize.
I thought you were just doubling up and giving her an encore.
No, I'm kicking it back to you, and you've already did it because you were first.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
fitting.
Man.
It was a fitting drop then. I was sitting here thinking
yeah,
that too. Like, oh,
the
what?
Fuck was
okay.
That?
All right.
And I'm just letting the dead air sit out there. Like, okay, when is he gonna go?
Oh, he wants me to go? No. Nacho Gate. I sent you the film.
I saw that. I saw that pop up that you sent the link to my Twitter. So I'll have to check that out. guess I'll have time to check that out in the next couple of minutes while I play the plugs as we get ready to give you your picks for the rest of Week 12 in the NFL. And we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Not on the radio, but only here on the website, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. To be notified when we're live, you can follow the show on the Blog Talk Radio website, or you can follow my Twitter feed at IMLDDre when I tweet out when we're live before every show. Jason is on Twitter too. His feed is at IMLDJTG. Our show is available as a podcast where you get the live show and a special VIP after show. To listen to the show as a podcast, about an hour or so after the live show is over, come back to the show page and look through our archives, or subscribe on iTunes or any number of different podcasting apps, including Player.fm, Mixcloud, Blueberry, and the TuneIn Radio app. You'll get the whole show, the live show and the after show, downloaded straight to you. You can always send us a question or comment or shout out via email to the following email address, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow all of our picks on our blog. The website for the blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Our Thursday night picks will be available Thursday afternoon on our Twitter feeds. Again, that's at IMLDDre and at IMLDJTG. This copyrighted broadcast is a production of Jay and Me and is solely performed for our entertainment as well as for any poor soul who happens to be listening. It is intended to be a football pick show for the private, non-commercial use of our audience. Any publication, reproduction, retransmission, or any other use of the descriptions and accounts of this podcast without the express written consent of Jay or me is strictly prohibited. Any issues with my connectivity thus far during the show?
No. This is right. definitely much better than the other Wi-Fi.
Okay.
That you've used in the past. So this is rock solid.
Excellent.
You should drive up to Chicago every show because this is perfect.
Only 9 hours of driving all day Tuesday, which I'm still recovering from, even though it's Friday going on Saturday. Sunday, going back, snow showers.
Yeah, we're supposed to have some snow showers here too, but not much. We're supposed to get like a half inch of snow.
That's not much to you, but we're from Memphis. You know, a half inch of snow.
No, I get it. You're not used to this cold right now, are you? Is it cold there?
It was so refreshing. I asked my cousin, my oldest cousin, to go to drive me to the gym, which he works out pretty regularly, and I said, let me get one workout in this week while I'm up here. And he drove me, and we had to wait like 15 minutes or so because he needed to warm up the car, and he was grabbing his winter coat and get it up. I went out there with the T-shirt and sweatpants that I was going to wear to the gym. I didn't grab my coat at all. Because I know once I, work out and lift and get hot, I'm definitely not going to have a need for a coat at that point. So, and just like, I felt exactly just the way I knew I would feel at the end of the workout, which is, this is great. I felt wonderful sitting there in 30-degree weather. That's wonderful to me coming from down south. And he couldn't believe it. I was like, I'm from here. I grew up here. He's like, I did too, man, but I need my coat and I need to warm up the car. I didn't have a problem at all with it. So
no, when I left for work today, it was 13 degrees. So.
Oh, well, that's different up there in Wisconsin where you are. That's a little different. That I would have a coat. but down here, it was about 32 degrees or so when we went to the gym, and that was perfect for me. I did not need a coat at all. And then I sat there and ordered a smoothie and drank a cold smoothie on the way back. So that was perfectly fine to me. One more item to waste time before we get to our picks. But like you said, there's so few games, we're going to have plenty of time anyway. So I did watch the Zapruder film of Tyreek Hill's wife with the nachos. That was news?
It's amazing how many sources and multiple places were basically it was almost like viral. How silly that was.
And dump nachos on her head, I expected to see, yellow sauce everywhere.
No,
and
she just knocked the nachos over on herself, basically.
I couldn't even tell if any got in her hair. It wasn't on top of her head. She knocked it behind herself. And she reacted like, oh, my God, what did I do? This is so disgusting. I couldn't tell if anything got on her.
Yeah.
That's how that was a new, like, get the hell out of here. That was
Nacho Gate.
Okay. All right. That was so not a news item.
That's why it goes into the WTF category, see?
I agree. I completely concur. What the fuck was that? We got the rest of Week 12 to pick for you. We've had all the Thanksgiving games and now the first ever Black Friday game, and we'll discuss those in much more or less detail next week because that will be part of the Week 12 recap. But for now, it is time for us to go into less or more detail.
Now let's talk about some games in more detail.
Or less. As we get ready for the rest of Week 12, Sunday and Monday night. First off, Sunday afternoon. Yet another another division game. There's all these games so far have been division games. Three Thanksgiving games. This game today was a division game. New Orleans and Atlanta is a division game. Always a rousing affair in the NFC. Maybe not, but Saints are 5-5, and the Falcons are 4-6. This is another one of those that are featuring both teams coming off the bye at the same time playing each other. Which again, I fully advocate for that. I think that's the only fair way to do it. Saints are 3-3 on the road. Falcons are 3-2 at home. Both will have wide receiver issues. Saints will not have Michael Thomas. He went on injured reserve with a knee injury. For Atlanta, Mac Hollins will not play. He's got an ankle injury. Saints also will not have their star cornerback, Marshon Lattimore, who has an ankle injury. Falcons have quarterback issues because I guess they're going back to Desmond Ridder. I thought they made the move on from to Beerman, but apparently Ridder gets back in the saddle and will get the next start after they come off a bye, which I don't know exactly how you feel about that, but I have a feeling I know. The spread for this game is very small, as are all the spreads, as we already discussed. Saints are -1.5 at the Falcons.
Well, we know Arthur Smith loves him some him, so he's going to try and out-genius everybody, and after going to Beerman, who wasn't terrible, he's going back to Ridder, who was mostly terrible. Ridder had some fits and starts. He definitely had a couple of terrible games where he managed to pull some plays out late, and then he had some terrible games where he couldn't pull some plays out late. So I expect a terrible game from Ridder. It's just, is he going to be able to make the plays late, or is he not? I'm going to go ahead. I'm still going to give the edge to Atlanta in this game. They had that string of extremely winnable games that they blew. Coming off of the bye, they lay an egg here. They're done. They win. They're back in first place. Oh, this division.
It was like last year, right?
Oh, my God. 5-6, they'll be in first place if they win. Just absolutely terrible. Should have won at least two out of those three. They blew it against the Cards. They blew it against the Vikings. But I'm going to give them one more chance to make amends after. I had them blowing it against the Cards, so I saw what was happening. But I still think at home, I think they're the healthier team. I don't think Mac Hollins not being there is going to affect them all that much. So we'll see. I think the Saints are missing more key pieces. I still don't know what to make of that Saints offense. So I'm just going to go ahead and take Atlanta here at home.
Okay. Your guy Art Smith, he's through with Beer Man, goes back to Ritter. Dennis Allen goes back to Derek Carr off of his concussion. I thought for a minute we were going to get some Wild Thing in there, but apparently Carr has been cleared. I'll trust the actual NFL starting quarterback of the two, which is not Ritter. That would be Derek Carr. So I will take the Saints and give the 1.5. Steelers-Bengals, another divisional matchup. Pittsburgh 6-4, Cincinnati 5-5. Bengals first game post Joe Burrow. So bye to Burrow and hi to Browning, Jake Browning, the starting quarterback for the Bengals for the foreseeable future. Once again, we'll not have T. Higgins as a weapon. He's out with that troublesome hammy, but they will get the edge rusher Sam Hubbard back from his knee injury. Steelers have some change as well. New OC Mike Sullivan steps in for Matt Canada. They will not have their safety Minka Fitzpatrick, who's got a hammy. Steelers are the road favorite here, -2.5 at the Bengals.
Yeah, so we'll see if the Bengals can take advantage of the Steelers firing their OC. It worked out for the Bills firing their OC, and they got the bounce back. We'll see if the Steelers and finally, after all the fans and all the media and the players and everybody wanted Canada fired, if let's see if he was the problem. Maybe, are they going to feature Jaylen Warren? Are they going to unleash Kenny Pickett a little bit more, throw some more deep balls, get George Pickens involved? Nobody was happy in that offense. So we'll see if this is a kumbaya moment for the Steelers. I'm going to take the Steelers because I am not sold on the Jake Browning experience. This is the perfect spot for the Steelers to toy around with a new offense because I do not expect the Cincinnati offense to do a whole heck of a lot in this game. Their running game has been wildly inefficient, and you're missing one of your top receiving options. So I think basically you just go shut down Ja'Marr Chase, put three guys on him, and make Jake Browning sprinkle it around to some guys. I just don't think it's going to be enough. I'm going to take the Steelers.
Yeah, this one should be low scoring. There's some rain in the forecast. It might be sloppy. So color me skeptical of the Steelers starting over with a new offense and with some weather. Playing against a division rival, the Bengals defense does stink, but it wouldn't be surprising to see them get up and do something in this game. So, yeah, go Canada. Go get out. Go now. And a good spot to do it in, frankly, because the Steelers won't have to score that much now that Joe Burrow is finished. So I do see a low scoring both ways. I just don't see a lot more points for Pittsburgh than they normally score. I don't know if there's an avenue for that. If there is, and they unleash some new incredible potential that Kenny Smallhands has with George Pickens, then okay, I'll eat my words, but I don't see it. I've seen the potential. I've seen Kenny Pickett and have games and have a lot of potential and a lot of connection with George Pickens that makes you go, okay, in the future those guys are going to light it up, and that's going to be. But it's just it hasn't happened. It hasn't come about. And maybe this guy will be the one to bring it out, but I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a week to wait and see if that's going to be the case that Mike Sullivan is going to be the one to bring the special Steelers offense to the bear. I'm not going to pick it this week, so I'll go with Jake Browning and the Bengals. I know that's not there's not a lot of confidence there either, but I'll take the Bengals. Carolina and Tennessee, those awful Panthers are 1-9, and the Titans are not much better at 3-7. Carolina hasn't won a game on the road, and Tennessee hasn't lost a game at home. So this should be straightforward. We'll see. Panthers won't have their tight end Hayden Hurst, who's dumplings. And Tennessee still doesn't have Treylon Burks, who's been dumplings for about a month now. That does not look good. When you're dumplings for that long, that's probably a bad sign. In any event, the Panthers are the dogs. They are +3.5 at Tennessee.
I'm a little my natural tendency here was going to be to take Tennessee. But since that first Will Levis game, when he sprung that trap on Atlanta and just launched to DeAndre Hopkins, and it worked over and over and over again. And, you know, Will Levis has arrived. He hasn't really done very much. Now, you got the Panthers, who've done way less. They're terrible. So it's the worst team in football against another rookie quarterback. I think it's going to be a really ugly game. I don't have a real strong feeling about this one either way. We've got a hook on this. I'll take that hook. I'll take the Panthers.
Okay. I got toasted and roasted trying to give the Panthers the benefit last week, and that did not work for me. I understand what you're saying. And the Panthers have a very sneaky, good pass defense. They actually are only giving up 6.5 yards a throw, so it would seem very unlikely if the Titans are to find their way to a W that it's going to be through the air. I don't know if Will Levis is getting his mojo back against the Panthers either. So I think it's got to be an old-fashioned Derrick Henry-type game. It's finally an opponent the Titans can beat. They're undefeated at home, like I said. They haven't had that many home games, only three. So they're going to get a whole bunch of them coming up in the next 5 or 6 weeks. I think they got like 4 or 5 home games. This is a great way to start. This is about the best team you can start off that slate with is the Panthers. I think they have to go old school and do it on the ground. Whatever Derrick Henry has left, he needs to give it, and they'll sprinkle in that kid, mix in, you know, they've been trying to mix him in all year. Their rookie, whose name I forget, but it's late, but it's okay. So I think they got to do it on the ground. And I got Tennessee. I'll give the 3.5, but if they try to just air it out, I don't think it's going to work out. I think they got to do it on the ground. Tampa Bay and Indianapolis. The Bucs are 4-6. The Colts are 5-5. Tampa 2-3 on the road. Bucs only Colts only 1-4 at home. Good veteran linebackers not being there is the story to this one. Lavonte David is hurt. He's not going to play with a groin injury for Tampa Bay. But Indianapolis won't have Darius Leonard, who's been a great veteran for many years for them. Not because he's hurt, but because they cut him. Huh? What? Just you got a disconnect with your player, and he thinks he should be playing more, and then finally they came to an agreement that he needs to get a fresh start, so the Colts just cut him, which is a very surprising move. They will also not have their veteran center, Ryan Kelly, who is dumplings. A lot of dumplings this week.
Dumplings and Achilles. That's the season.
And hammies. Bucks are the underdog here, plus 2.5 at the Colts.
Yeah, good luck. Most of these games are just toss-ups. I mean, it's like they are basically in pick'em territory when we're talking about all these games with these 2 and 3 and 1.5 point spreads. This is look at us. We've disagreed basically, and we're not disagreeing so much on points. It's just we're picking winners.
Pretty much straight up.
I guess I
had
Carolina as a points play. I don't have a point play on this one. I'm just going to take Tampa. It's a team that's been in a rut. They've been in a rut for a while. I think they finally have a beatable opponent. The Colts are not scaring anybody. They're starting to finally get a little bit of juice going in the ground game. Jonathan Taylor is starting to look better. But we know that Gardner Minshew's capable of just completely laying eggs. He's more inconsistent than the guy on the other side, who still at least has one play. We talked about it in the last show.
Throw it up.
They're not playing. And this isn't the Niners. They got a sneaky push last week against the Niners, blew your lock. But I'm going to go ahead. Yeah, I know that was cheap. I'm going to go ahead and take Tampa here just to straight up win this game. I think you can see a little Baker to Evans, Baker to Godwin. I hate to say it because you wouldn't think it of this game. I think this game has some sneaky shootout potential because both of these teams are bad. And sometimes two bad teams just shoot out even if you don't expect it.
Yeah, especially in domes, sure. But count us 4 for 4 in disagreeing. I'm still stunned at how bad Tampa's pass coverage has been. They're usually very stout, but they're just giving it up all over the place this year. 8 yards per throw, next to last in football. I got Minshew Mania lighting them up off the bye. I will take the Colts and give the 2.5.
Okay.
Let's see if we go 5 for 5. New England and the Giants. Ooh. the 2-8 Patriots and the 3-8 Giants. New England's coming off their bye. Both their wins are on the road, if you count the England game. Giants 1-3 at home. The Patriots quarterback apparently is going to be Mac Jones, unless it's Bailey Zappe. Basically, GOAT coaches at the end of his rope and is playing games with not naming a starting quarterback, basically, and saying, I'm not going to name the starters before every game. So whoever the quarterback is going to be is not very good, and that's why he has to pull tricks like this. Doesn't really matter who it is. We know the quarterback is for the Giants is Danny DeVito, who's coming off his career game. Won't have Darius Slayton. He's doubtful with a neck injury, as is the big man in the middle, Dexter Lawrence, the defensive tackle, who's got a hammy. Patriots are actually the favorite off the bye. They're -3.5 at the Giants.
Yeah, this line made me almost do a bit of a double take. Clearly, Vegas is not buying into the Giants' performance last week and saying that they expect those benefits to continue like they got last week, because I don't buy it either. I'm going to take New England here, and this isn't a pro GOAT coach play or any of that. This is, I don't believe that the Patriots are going to give the Giants 24 points off of turnovers like they were gifted last week by Washington, by the team Manderskins. No, they're not going to have, Mac Jones / Bailey Zappe isn't going to have some combination of 3 picks and 3 fumbles and just completely gag this game away. The Giants are absolute garbage. So we may think that that Brian Daboll is going to have Danny DeVito all coached up, and he's no. I think that was an aberration. I think that was a bit fluky. I'm still going to go ahead and take the Patriots, even though they're complete garbage too. I mean, this is two garbage teams. I mean, let's just be real. We're picking the worst of the worst right now, two of the worst teams in the league, and I'm trying to pick which one I think is going to be less worse. I'm going to go ahead and just give these points, because I think that the Patriots, as bad as they are less worse than the Giants. It doesn't help that they're missing their best receiver from the last game.
I mean, we're talking 5-16 combined here, so,
yeah, they're both bad.
They're not good. All these games are kind of bad, with the exception of two. You're talking about only two games on the whole docket with teams that are both over 500. So all these other games, just kind of good luck and hold your nose. This is the first one we'll agree on, though. I'll give the GOAT coach the benefit and the reason. One last hat tip to the GOAT versus an inexperienced bad quarterback. You remember back in the day when, in the good days, in the halcyon days when Tommy was the quarterback, and people would gush over Belichick just completely shutting down an inexperienced quarterback. We remember one of the worst Super Bowls we've ever watched with Belichick versus an inexperienced quarterback in Jared Goff, and we remember how that went. And the Giants and Danny DeVito and Daboll, that's not Jared Goff and Sean McVay. That's not even on the same level. I'm going to take Belichick to find a way to turn off whatever that mojo was that Danny DeVito had last week. Good that he did it. Good job. Congratulations. Do it again. Let's see it again. So we're both on the same track on that one. All right, Jags-Texans, one of the few decent games of the week. The only one of only two with two teams that both are above 500. The battle, as it turns out, for control of the AFC South. I don't think any of us saw that coming this late in the season. Jags are 7-3. Texans are 6-4. Jags are an undefeated 5-0 on the road, 4-0 if you don't count the England game. Houston 4-1 at home. Texans look to get running back Damian Pierce back from his ankle injury, but they will not have receiver Noah Brown, who's out with a knee injury. In this one, the Jags are actually the favorite, despite how hot C.J. Stroud is. Jacksonville is a very slight 1.5-point favorite at Houston.
I like this one because this is a gut check game for the Jaguars, right? They are supposed to be the kings of the division. They were not supposed to be in this fight. I don't think anybody I thought Tennessee was going to be better than they are, but that fell apart.
Yeah.
But for most consensus was that the Jaguars were, this was their division, and Houston was, all these teams were too far away. Houston and, you know, and Indy, Tennessee, they were just not going to contend. And here we are, you know, week away from December, and they're playing for first place against the Houston Texans. So yeah, like I said, that's gut check time as far as I'm concerned. So I'm just really curious what the intestinal fortitude is of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And you got Houston, they're playing with house money right now. They weren't supposed to be this good this fast. Yes, C.J. Stroud is not the MVP, but he's also really damn good. And they've been finding ways to win. He's got they talk about rapport with your receivers. You know, he is just finding guys and making names out of guys. And that's what good quarterbacks do, right? Don't they? They ascend the people around them. And
sure.
He's turning these guys into names. They've got this nice little running attack going. They get Pierce back. They've got Singletary. I'm gonna take the team that I think is going to play more fast and loose. I think the Jags come out tight, not expecting to be in a fight. This feels like the last team with the ball wins. I think that's going to be Houston.
All right. These two battled in week three, and Houston stunned. Maybe that was the opening salvo to C.J. Stroud. Hey, pay attention. I'm
yeah.
different than people think. Texans knock off the Jags down in Jacksonville 37-17. The Jags came out deflated after a close loss the week before to Kansas City. That was the game where they had all those touchdowns that they just couldn't get a foot down in bounds and
yep.
Couldn't find a way to beat the Chiefs. And they responded to that the next week by coming out and getting housed by the Texans at home and destroyed by C.J. Stroud. So I guess I'm thinking maybe they're aware of that and will be out for a little revenge. I think they're got to be aware of, hey, we thought we were going to coast to the division and win 13 games and not have anybody even sniff us. And here's the Texans one game away from taking the division lead from us. Hey, if the Texans take this one and sweep the Jags, that's a huge statement. And I'll just tip my cap to them and C.J. Stroud. You know how I feel about him, of course, and I think you feel the same. I just feel like the Stroud pixie dust is wearing off. You see that 3-interception game last week. And he's got the attitude of, hey, you know, Steph Curry keeps shooting. You know, you can tell how young he is because our generation would say Michael Jordan keeps shooting. He doesn't know about Jordan playing because he wasn't born yet. So he says, Steph Curry keeps shooting, I'm going to keep shooting. You know, but those rookie INTs, you're not going to have a rookie come in and throw, you know, two INTs for the whole season before a couple of weeks ago.
Well, it
and
took
now
them,
start...
what, 7 weeks before he finally threw one?
And now they're starting to come in bunches. You get the three last week, so I think
yeah.
that started to kick in. So I think he's the one that might come out a little tight. He says, you know, I'm going to keep shooting. He acts like he's going to be totally loose, but I think he's the one that actually will be a little iffy. You know, you got to be a little bit coming off a game like that. And he came back and won the game anyway, so that I think that contributes to it. He probably doesn't learn a lesson. He probably thinks, I can do whatever I want. I'm still going to find a way to win. So I'm going to take the Jags to come back, avenge the bad loss that they had in Jacksonville, and respect. You got to respect C.J. Stroud and the Texans, and you got to come out and beat them because if you don't, you know what's going to happen. They're going to take you down because they already did it. So I think the Jags know that. So I'm going to trust the Jags to have some professionalism about them and come out and put the Texans down where they're supposed to be. All right, from there, the Cleveland Browns and the Denver Broncos. Browns at 7-3, Denver 5-5, surprisingly, because of how they started the season.
Yeah.
It's almost shocking that they're up to 500 now as we start our late afternoon action. Browns 2-2 on the road, Denver 3-3 at home. Cleveland will not have their star cornerback, Denzel Ward. He's got a shoulder injury. In this one, the Browns are the very slight underdog, DTR and the Browns plus 1.5 at Russ and the Broncos.
Yeah, all credit for Dorian Thompson Robinson last week with the win at home against Pittsburgh. But you got to go up to Mile High now. You're this next start, I think that's too tall an order for the kid. going up to Denver in this hostile environment. I don't want it to be another Ravens meltdown like he had in that game where he was pressed into action play against the Ravens. I don't think – I mean, Denver's defense has been improved since the 70 burger, and they've been and getting better kind of a little bit each week. There's a lot of holes in that defense, but I don't know if DTR is the guy to exploit those holes. And offensively, Russell Wilson seems to have come back from the dead. He's making some plays. He's got some playmakers. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take Denver here. I mean, DTR, I know he was your best of the week. I need to see this on the road in Denver before I start to believe.
Yeah. That should be enough to take down DTR. The Broncos are playing better, definitely. And it would be hard to play worse on defense than what they played to start the year, but they're definitely playing better. They're all the way back, baby. Man, I don't know about all that, but DTR, he wasn't good in beating Pittsburgh. He was my best of the week. He was not good. Should be a big under. How about that? I love the under for this one. Whatever the overall the over-under number would be, I don't see a whole lot of points.
36 and a half right now. 36 and
yeah,
a half.
Yeah, I think
I don't see this getting over.
I think that's a pretty good bet there, but I'm going to concur with you.
Broncos country, let's ride.
Gonna ride with Russ and take the Broncos and give the 1.5. Another divisional matchup in the NFC West, the Rams visiting the Cards. So the Cards is developing into your team. If you take them a third week in a row, I think that we have to declare the Cardinals as your special team this year.
My sneaky cover team. Yeah, I've been riding the Kyler Murray thing here. So
ever since Kyler came back.
I'm waiting for you to pick them so I can jump off.
Exactly. In week 6, the Rams destroyed the Cardinals 26-9. They grinded Josh Dobbs and the Cards into dust. They ran for $179 on Arizona as they ran to victory in that one. Back when Josh Dobbs was on the Cards, that seems like the last season, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Injury wise for the Rams, running back Kyren Williams is expected back from his ankle injury. Cooper Kupp is also expected to give it a try off of his ankle injury, which will be interesting. That did not look like we would see Cooper Kupp, that injury that he suffered last week. So that might be one of those decoy situations. So all you daily players, be careful with Cooper Kupp there. Hollywood Brown has a heel for the Arizona team, and he's not practicing. So that doesn't look good. They haven't ruled him out yet, but definitely keep an eye on that as well. Another small spread. Rams are the slight favorite, -2.5 at the Cardinals.
Well, the Rams were 1.5-point favorites last week and managed to win by 1. So another one of those picks I felt like I got right and still lost. They were the favorite. I don't know how they were the favorite, but Vegas liked them as the favorite. They liked them as the favorite here. And this is a small number, so I'm hoping that the Cards – I'm jumping off. I'm hoping that the Cards don't come up and bite me in the ass here and lose by 1. Taking the Rams. They handled these guys pretty easy the first time. And while I have enjoyed what the added element that Kyler Murray has brought to this offense, made them look a lot more, at least league average. He's given them some excitement. I still think that the Rams have too much. And they showed that the last time. I don't think that defense for the Cardinals has gotten any better. I don't think Matthew Stafford's going to be throwing around a lot of picks, keeping them in the game the way C.J. Stroud did last week. Matthew Stafford, he's got receivers. He's got Kyren Williams getting him back is huge. I still think that's too much coaching, too much talent. Rams win.
Yeah, the team that isn't trying to tank. Wonder when they're going to sit Kyler Murray back down because, hey, you're not supposed to be winning games, kid. What are you doing?
Yeah, you guys are competing too much.
Exactly. They traded Josh Dobbs when that happened, or did they cut him? Wait, I'm trying to remember. One of them cut him, and it's who cut him and who traded for him? I can't remember. He's been on so many teams now.
Yeah.
In any event, I'm not jumping on the Arizona here. I'm going with the Rams with you. It's always fun watching Kyler Murray's little feet trying to run away from Aaron Donald. I think this might not work out for him this time, so. So soon coming back from his injury. So I'm going to concur and take the Rams along with you. Here's the biggest spread of the week. Chiefs, Raiders in AFC West action. Kansas City at 7-3, 4-1 on the road, trying to rebound from that game Monday night that they should have won, but just found a way to not win it. And the Raiders 5-6, but four of those wins are at home. The originator of the Mecole Hardman, I guess, Chiefs meme, the actual original Mecole Hardman is back of the play. He's got a thumb injury. But much more impactfully, Max Crosby looks like he's not going to play for the Raiders. The star pass rusher's got a knee injury of his own. Chiefs, big favorite, -9.5 at the Raiders.
You say what you will about the Raiders. They got the dead cat coach bounce, and then they went, and that was the most shocking one, and they didn't win, was going to Miami and keeping that within a touchdown, and I did not see that happen. Neither one of us did.
No, they fought. Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a lot of fight in this team, and that might be the worst thing that coming off of that Monday night game against the Eagles, I think the Chiefs would have preferred a team with a lot less fight and a cakewalk. And I don't know if the Raiders, Antonio Pierce seems to have bringing them the nasty a little bit. They held Tua at home and the Dolphins offense to 20. I don't know if they're going to do that here, but I can see them staying under the number. That's a lot of points for a team that seems to have at least bought into this new coaching regime and a Chiefs offense that is so discombobulated. I just don't know. I don't know how you trust them right now. That's a big number going on the road against a team that seems to have some heart left in them. So I'm going to take the Raiders and the points.
Yeah, the Raiders fought in Miami for Antonio Pierce. I was impressed with that. Now here's the Chiefs, who did what they had to do to beat Philadelphia, except catch the damn ball.
Except win.
Man. I like I said, I don't know how Pat didn't take a flamethrower to those guys in the press conference afterwards. I'm taking the points with you. I'm taking the Raiders. They fight. The Raiders absolutely fight for Antonio Pierce, and the Chiefs are not in a position to just blow anybody out. They need to just concentrate on catching the ball. Don't worry about beating teams by two possessions. Just catch it and get in the end zone and win the game. Don't worry about the spread.
I don't even know. The Chiefs aren't even in that mode right now where we normally are worried. Like, if this was the normal Chiefs, right, if this was the Chiefs at full strength and they were confident and cocky, this would have been the normal spot where they'd show up small, you know, and they'd get down early and then they'd have to come back and barely cover late. I just expect this to be more of just a straight-up fight. I don't think they're confident and cocky enough to be able to just play down to their competition right now.
I definitely concur. I don't think they're coming in thinking, yeah, we bad and we the Chiefs and we can take the Raiders out no matter what. And no, I don't think they're on that at all right now. I think they're having a bit of a crisis and wondering, you know, what's it going to take and who's going to be the next person to have the game on their hands and just drop it, let it slip right through. All those guys are probably thinking the same thing, like, please don't throw it to me. Please don't throw it to me. They're probably all having nightmares of Pat throwing them the ball. So, no, I definitely agree with you. I think they're not in a good spot right now. I want to see them have a full game together and put it all together before I bet them with a big spread right now. Cause I don't think they got the confidence at all. So I'm with you. Wow, I can't believe all this time again for three games.
Well, we've already had four games.
Yes, I understand. well, we probably spent a lot of time on Bills-Eagles. That's the other big game of the week.
Game of the week, right?
The only other game with two teams with winning records. And the Bills barely have a winning record at 6-5 and 1-4 on the road. And the Eagles 9-1. Perfect 4-0 at home. Most of the concussed backfield, defensive backfield for the Bills has been cleared. So that was a thing that was looking really scary. It seemed like all whatever many secondary members, all 12 of them coming into the game last week, that they all got concussed at the same time, even though the Bills won that game handily. But most of them have been cleared. A couple of them are not going to play, but most of them are going to be back there for the Buffalo Bills. For the Eagles, tight end Dallas Goedert, once again, is down with that nasty arm injury that we saw him have a few weeks ago. And this one, Good old cop-out line, Bills plus 3 at the Eagles.
Yeah, I think the Bills, just by virtue of that stomping of the Jets last week, got themselves back to that. Because I don't know if the Bills show up small last week that they're only, you know, being given 3. I think this is a little bit more Vegas mental muscle memory going on here. They're like, nah, it's the Bills, you know, right? No, I don't, it's just which Bills team are we going to get? Are we going to get the highly motivated, you know, underdog mentality Bills team, and they're going to show up, and Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts are going to go, you know, toe-to-toe? Because I think the only way that the Bills win this game is – it's not going to be a defensive victory for the Bills. It's going to be they shoot out and have to win a high-scoring affair. I think if this game's more based off of defense, I think that the Eagles win, possibly pretty easy. There's going to be a lot of pressure. They're going to be coming after Josh Allen. We're going to have to see if he can get the ball out quick. No arm punts, you know. No panic throws, no desperation heaves. They're not going to – I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball all that effectively. So this is going to be where's Josh Allen at? I think he got a lot of practice last week, though, because the Jets defense was sort of his bugaboo, you know. And he handled them, and he acquitted himself nicely. I think that was nice preparation for going into another top-tier defense. But that top-tier defense is bringing with it an offense that can score with anybody. So this is clearly the game of the week. I don't know why we couldn't have this flexed into prime time. But yeah. It's okay. Well, I'll take it as an afternoon start. I'm working on Sunday, but I'll still be able to catch second half of this game. I'll definitely be watching. Man, it's so easy in this spot to pick the Eagles, but I'm rolling with the Bills. I think that they know that they're playing the team that went to the Super Bowl last year. If there's no more motivation than that, especially knowing that you're almost in must-win mode every week. Miami already won. I think the Bills are going to be highly motivated, and that's always when the Bills are their best. This would be a great game, though.
Yeah.
And it smells all sorts of pushy. So, I mean, I could have said all that and we get a push and it doesn't matter. But I'll still take the Bills here. I like the Bills to win.
Yeah, I concur. So do I. I'd like them to win, too. Just a feeling. Just a feeling that the Bills and Project are still feeding off of the Ken Dorsey firing. And, you know, Project really took that personal. Like, I'm watching not just the post game, but some of the like Inside the NFL, those type of shows that have like the mic'd up type of stuff. And he was going on about it during the game, talking and after the game in the locker room as well, you know, using profanity and talking about, you know, this is for fucking Dorsey and we effed this up and you know, we got to get back to what doing what we're supposed to be doing. And I feel like I'm fucking, he yelled that during the game. I feel like I'm fucking back. So he's really taking that to heart. And that's what I wanted to see. You know, I wanted to see that he was affected by it because he should be, because I get the feeling he feels like his play and his arm punts are the reason why Ken Dorsey is unemployed. And it is. It is the reason he's unemployed. You're absolutely why he doesn't have a job. That offense was not bad at all. I read the numbers in the rankings last week and marveled at how ridiculous it was that the OC that leads them to such numbers, such lofty stats, you know, top 10 in the league, has to get fired. But clearly the team needed something. Clearly a shakeup needed to happen, and clearly Sean McDermott was feeling the heat around his collar and getting the hot seat. So that's what he did, and it worked for one game. And I do want to see it again, and I do respect the Eagles, and I'm not saying that the Bills are going to run over the Eagles or anything like that, but I think they are going to take it up upon themselves to prove that the Ken Dorsey firing was something that is not going to be in vain. They're going to a couple of those very hard games on the upcoming schedule. They're going to need to win a couple of those if they're going to have any chance to be legitimately back in the race for the AFC, for the top of the AFC. Because right now they're fighting just to get back into the playoffs. They're still not in the playoffs, I don't believe. But, yeah, when you look at that schedule, Philadelphia, they finally get their bye. They come back off of their bye, they got to go to Kansas City. After that, they got to host a friggin' Cowboys. And it gets, you know, easier after that with the Chargers, who apparently are liquidating before our eyes. And then they got to end the season week 18 at Miami. So they know they got to get like three or four of those at least if they want to contend for the top of the AFC. And they got to get like at least two of those big ones if they want to, you know, make it back into the playoff picture. So, yeah, I think that they're in that mode. I think they flipped that switch that we always talk about that the Bills can do. They can turn it on when they want to, when they're motivated. So we both see it the same way. We're both probably rooting a little bit for them. Me as their Super Bowl, my Super Bowl pick this year, and you as Hipster J, the original Bills lover from before anyone else thought it was cool.
This iteration of the Bills team. Yeah, I was calling this like 2 years before it happened.
So probably with our hearts a little bit, we're both going to take the Bills to go into Philly and pull off what would be a real nice upset of a 9-1 team.
And I'm not going to say that the Eagles are any kind of a fraudulent 9-1, right? This isn't
nope,
the fraud king.
Me neither.
But they're not a perfect look. There's chinks in the armor with the Eagles, so they have not been the same team offensively like they were last year. The tush push is great, and we know if they get down to the 1 yard line or 2 yard line, they're just going to push Jalen Hurts into the end zone. That's fine, but it doesn't look like it looked last year. So even though they've got the great record, yes, they should have lost to the Eagles. I mean, they should have lost to the Chiefs. Yes. They had Washington had them on the ropes twice, I believe, at times.
The close games.
Yeah. So the Bills, a quality opponent, are going to come in there and be a huge test for them. And I do expect them to bounce back. That win they got last week was what they needed, and that's what I needed to see. I needed to see them go out and destroy a team that they should destroy, but they also destroyed a team that was, like I said, it was kind of their nemesis these last couple of seasons, and they put them down. I mean, they took them out back and, like, old yellered them. So, and that's what they needed to do, you know, exercise some of the demons and, maybe they are. Maybe he is back. Maybe Josh Allen is probably fucking back.
That's how I think it's going to happen. I'll tell you exactly how I think the game's going to go. I think they're going to play to a stalemate on the ground. I don't think the Eagles have the clear running advantage that they should have. And I think because a big part of that running advantage was Hurts himself. And he's not the same Hurts as last year. He's hurt to play off his name. And he's just not the same guy. They can do the tush push with him because you're only trying to gain a yard, but you don't see any open field running highlights of him this year because he's not the same guy. He's clearly injured and playing through that. And anytime you see him try to run and open it up in the open field, you can see the little hitch in his giddy up. So he's clearly not the same. I think they're going to play to a draw on the ground, and it becomes a bit of a shootout in the air. And I respect Jalen Hurts, and of course I respect the hell out of AJ Brown and Devontae Smith, but when the Bills are playing their best and when Project is at his best, it's not going to go Jalen Hurts' way versus Project in an air shootout. It's going to be close, but it should go Project's way, you know, 8 out of 10 times. He's just better at arm talent than Jalen Hurts. And that's how I think it's going to go. I think it's going to go for 300, and they're going to win a shootout in the 30s.
Okay, so we see that kind of going the same way for a Buffalo. Like I said, if it's a defensive game, I don't think the Bills are going to hang. But yeah, I see them winning a shootout too. And I didn't get an award for it, but I just want to give we talked about the horrible drop of MVS. Let's appreciate for a moment that catch that Devontae Smith made. at the end of that game, because when you talk about receivers and you talk about late hands, you know, not trying to give anything away.
Yeah.
Man, that was one of the prettiest late hand catches, if you know the one I'm talking about, down the sideline that basically sealed the game for them, because that DB had no idea that the ball was going to Devontae Smith, and he's just running, and the next thing you know, whoop, the hands come out, and just absolutely gorgeous catch. And Patrick Mahomes could use a guy like that.
Boy, howdy, could he ever. Man. You don't even have to have good eye discipline and good hand discipline. Just catch the ball, period.
Yeah.
You have to do all of that.
Boy, howdy.
That catch was pretty. That was one of the prettier catches of the week. In a week of drops, that was a thing of beauty.
All right, Sunday night, Baltimore and the Los Angeles Chargers. The Ravens are 8-3. The Chargers are 4-6, and some of us think they're circling down the drain. Baltimore 4-1 on the road.
I haven't heard a lock yet.
No, you haven't. poor Ravens, of course, losing Mark Andrews with that ankle and fibula injury. But as you mentioned, they have a replacement that we think we've seen the potential for him to be probably better than any second string tight end in the league, Isaiah Likely. I think you would agree with that.
Yes.
And OBJ is a game time decision with a shoulder injury. Catastrophic injury on the Clippers side. Joey Bosa went on IR with a foot injury. So another under the radar bad injury to a really talented player. Ravens are the road favorite in this one, -3 and a hook at the Clippers.
Yeah, I think all of that adds up to another bad week for the salty balls of Staley. Justin Herbert and that offense, I'm sure they'll get theirs and they'll move the ball. But, that defense, minus their best player, especially on the line, they're not going to get any pressure on Lamar, a lot less than they were going to. Gus Edwards is a battering ram. Yes, Mark Andrews is gone, but yes, Isaiah Likely, his likely replacement, is very good. Those receivers have been doing good work for Lamar, who's been very quietly moving a top-ranked, highly-ranked offense. So, yeah, I can see the salty balls of Staley blowing another game here and giving the Ravens another win and another cover.
Yeah, very explosive offense. When you talk about 8 yards per throw and then number one back where they belong, running the ball, top-ranked running offense in the league, 4.8 yards per carry. Again, we talk about that Ravens late-season collapse. Hasn't happened yet. Don't know if it's going to happen here. This team against this coach, the Chargers, they're toast. Chargers are just completely done. They got to think their coach is a fucktard. I don't think they're going to play very hard for him going forward. I still like the guy, honestly, balls of Staley, but snapping at the reporter, that's weak sauce. So I like the Ravens despite the Andrews injury. I like them -3.5. I think that kind of might be a ridiculously low line. I think they can easily win this game running away late by 3 touchdowns or so. And therefore, you kind of felt that coming. And that is indeed my lock of the week.
Yeah, it's dead man walking time.
Yes.
For the Clipper Chargers.
Yeah, absolutely. On Monday night, I am here near the Chi. I'm not in the Chi. We live, my uncle lives pretty far south of the Chi now, but still near enough to Chicago. The Bears at 3-8, visiting the Minnesota Vikings at 6-5. In week 6, the Vikings went up to Soldier Field, and I locked up Chicago then and did not work out. Minnesota won 19-13. That was the game where Fields got his thumb popped. So
that was,
Tyson Bagent.
Tyson Bagent era first, began.
His first taste of action, and he wasn't able to get it done. So now Fields is back under center for Minnesota, who still will not have Justin Jefferson back from his hamstring injury. The 3-8 Bears are the cop-out underdog +3 at the 6-5 Vikings.
I'm going to take the Bears. I think that Justin Fields evens up that win total with Tyson Bagent for the season. So we can stop with the memes. I liked what I saw out of him. He was making some, like I said, he made some man throws. That throw to DJ Moore, that offense looked better. Josh Sweat was already – it is Josh Sweat, right? Is it Montez Sweat? Which Sweat is that?
Montez.
Is that Keith Sweat?
Definitely not Keith.
Okay. He's already showing that he's improving that defensive line. So that was a nice little pickup for them, and they looked a lot better, even though they still gave up a lot of points to the Lions in a late collapse. I think that's something for them to build off of. They looked good. They were in control of that game. I'm going to take the Bears on Monday night to win as a road dog. It's Bear Whispering time.
All right. I like Bear Whispering. Montez Sweat, yes.
Montez.
Come on. I'm in the shy. I'm in a Chicago suburb anyway. I'm wearing a, you can't see it, but I'm wearing a Bears jersey as I do this show. You think I'm going against the Bears? Come on. Gotta go with the Bears. Gotta agree with you on that.
Stop Bears. Bears.
They showed me something. It wasn't much, but it was something.
Just something. Yeah. They showed me a lot. I didn't like Fields coming back from a long way off because he seems to never get going quickly,
right.
Whether it's the beginning of the season or coming back from injury. He always starts slow, and he wasn't slow on Sunday. He did not start slow at all. He certainly had them in position to win that game. That was a historic one. Now, when you talk about 12 up 12 with under 5 to go, there's not a whole lot of teams that have blown that, but the Bears managed to blow that.
And the Vikings kind of feel ripe here. You know, they had that nice little resurgence, and Josh Dobbs was a nice story, and they did hang tough with Denver. They almost pulled that thing out, but going home here, home favorite, Monday Night Football, I don't know. I just got a feeling about this one.
Yeah, me too. I hope I'm correct about it. I'll be back in Memphis when they play it, but hopefully the Bears come through.
Well, you know, we disagreed a lot early, but we started to agree a lot more late.
So what do you think that added up to?
5.
The first 4. We disagreed on the first 4.
We agreed on a lot after that.
And then the Jags in Houston. Yeah, and we agreed on everything else after that. So, yes, 5 is correct.
Yeah, okay. Because all of a sudden it was just kumbaya. I thought we were going to agree on every game. So
we
it's
agreed
all
on
early?
All the, yes, all the late games and the primetime games, we agreed on all of those.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And we managed to go 2-2 to start the week.
That's right. Right down the middle.
Oh, yeah. So you got, we both lost the Lions pick. You.
That's right.
And I both easily had the Cowboys, and I'm still kicking myself for not locking it up, but I made I atoned.
Yeah, you can't kick yourself anymore because you locked up another easy one today.
Yeah, and then you got me on Thanksgiving night
Thanksgiving
with the Niners, and I had the Seahawks to stay close, and they did not. And then you had the you believed in Tim Boyle, and his career line going in with 3 tutties and 9 picks, and oh man, that was enough for me.
I know how terrible Zach Wilson's been all year, and I'm like, it's something, it's something else, it's
yep.
something new. It can't be much worse. It might be better.
It was worse. It was worse.
Somehow
most of Tim Boyle's yards were Dak time in that game, and that
right.
was. Straight up Dak time, because end of the third quarter, I want to say he had about 40 yards passing, 50 yards passing. It was pretty bad.
I watched none of the fourth. I know about the rest of the game, but by the time the third quarter was over, that Novocaine drive that they just bled the clock, I was like, okay, this is a wrap. So I turned that off.
I don't want to unpack too much from any of the Thanksgiving stuff, because I'm pretty sure we're going to be talking about some of it next week on the
sure.
recap show. So I'm good Saturday. I'm actually off all next weekend, so Saturday
okay.
night works perfect.
All right.
Unless something comes up.
Right.
I don't
have anything scheduled, so I'm good.
Okay. So to update a previous news item on the show,
yes.
they did allow the guy from my wife's league to participate, because the assumption was that the guy who got
person.
For double picking the Cowboys, they allowed him to stay in because everybody else walked too.
Yeah, that's a good
so
point.
So they allowed him to stay in. So then we forward to last week, and we have a team. There were 4 teams left. They're down to 3. So a team gets bumped. They had Washington, who changed their pick at the last minute after having Cleveland.
Oh.
And I told my wife, always stick with your first.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they had Cleveland and then changed it to Washington at the last
Because it's Danny DeVito. There's no way he's going to beat the potato skins.
You know, I had my wife, I had her take the Commanders, Team Mander skins, Washingtons, or whatever you want to, potato skins. I had her take them in week one.
Just to get it out of the way.
The lock to get it out of the way, right? Take a bad team. And it came through, obviously, because she's still in it. But if that was still on the table, I might have had her take Washington.
Nobody believed in
it. Nobody saw six turnovers, Danny DeVito, and oh, man. So you crapped on her survivor pick this week. I told her to take Pittsburgh.
Huh. Yeah, so. I don't – believe me, that's not a – anywhere near a lock or something that I believe strongly
you
don't feel, in.
You didn't see, yeah. I noticed that with the games that we were disagreeing on, we were not loudly disagreeing on them.
No, because they're all so close.
Yeah.
These are all these 1 and 2 point spreads. So basically you're just, picking who you think you want. In my confidence pool this week, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati is how much I believe in the Bengals. Two points on the Bengals.
I could see that because I don't know what you saw to Jake Browning. I can see that
much.
As an anti-Pittsburgh pick, but
I don't even know why. It's just a feel. The Steelers have gotten so much luck. I think it's basically sort of things evening themselves out. They've won so many games that they didn't deserve to.
Well, it's still hilarious that they finally outgamed a team and they lost.
And lost, of course.
So watch them outgame Cincinnati and lose.
And lose.
We'll see. I don't want them to because I want my wife to win the survivor pool. It's like $340.
Nice.
So
I wish we have our survivor. I wish it would go this long 1 year because it never lasts past week three.
Well, I remember last year it was week two and everybody was done. Or week three.
Yes.
It was bad last year. And yeah, we're all on. We're into week 12 now, and now we're sweating it because it's all the obvious favorites,
right?
All your obvious Thanksgiving ones. Well, even the Lions, I had already had her use. Didn't see that coming, but I couldn't use Dallas. Couldn't use the Niners. You know, I couldn't use Miami.
Right.
You know, and then some of these other ones are tricky ones or ones I've had her use. Like I've already had her use Baltimore. That would have been a really nice one, I think, to have in the back pocket. Would it be? But, you know, you start burning up teams, and it's just this week is so tough because there are all the obvious favorites have already been used, and all the rest of the games are toss-up games.
Are not obvious at all.
Right.
Yeah, but we've been talking about it all year. There's only so many decent teams.
Right. And you had all the
so many
teams
you have
this week
from.
Playing in what looked like squash spots.
Yeah. It's tough.
So I know why they call them survivor pools now, because it is really, you're parceling out things, and it's not easy. I thought about Denver this week.
Wow. You know it's rough going if you're thinking about Russ and Sean Payton and that team that just they gave up 70 to begin the year.
I know, but it – come on. I know that you appreciated DTR, but he's still that guy. He's still the Baltimore DTR too, right? That game was atrocious.
Yes, it was. He wasn't very good.
He wasn't that great
in
against
his,
Pittsburgh.
In his W, no.
Pittsburgh
no,
was just
wasn't.
More awful. they were so awful they got their OC fired.
Go Canada.
What's not talked about in that game is how awful Kenny Pickett played in that game. He was terrible.
I think his awfulness gets talked about decent amount.
But 15 for 28 for a .06?
That smells.
Yeah.
That smells like Thanksgiving leftovers that got left out. It didn't get put in the fridge.
Yeah, that's bad.
You can smell that.
But I'm pretty tired.
Yeah, I hear you.
So
I certainly understand.
One of these shows, maybe next week, one of these shows will actually, maybe next week, since it's in the middle of me, I think I'm in the middle of a 4-day weekend next week, because I always try to have a nice long weekend once you get through all the Black Friday period. So
yeah.
I think it might be some real or fake time next week.
I hear you. I was thinking about that myself.
Because I think we are overdue. I think we've
yeah.
usually in most seasons have done it by now, but I think once we have week 12 behind us with, what, six to go,
mm-hmm.
I think we need to play a little real or fake next week in the after show.
I couldn't have thought of a better idea myself. I was thinking about that last week. I was like, we can't do it this coming with the Thanksgiving,
right.
with the Black Friday and all that. I knew we wouldn't have time to do it because we'd be through with the show after midnight. So, but yeah, I'm with you. I'm on the same wavelength, brother.
All right. So there we go. I'll prepare for my thoughts for some real and fake, and maybe this week will change some of those opinions. So we'll see.
We'll see. I don't know how much ambient noise came in from guys coming in and out, but
a little bit, but not much.
Okay. Well, they were the guys were polite. They didn't talk too loudly as they came in and out, so that's good. I'm in somebody else's house. I'm not gonna complain or make a stink about it. But I'm just so happy to be here and have been doing. I've been spending the week here with my family and catching up, and man, there's so much that, you know, when you haven't been with your family, around your family in 6 years like this, there's so many things to catch up on, so many things you didn't know, some new additions. I've got new cousins that I didn't know about, and I know I got the one on the way from my aunt's oldest son, that I'll get to see them tomorrow. But my my uncle's youngest son's got a new addition, a new daughter. So very happy to see that. And like I said, I went with his oldest son to the gym this morning and caught up and had some good conversation with him. Of course, my uncle's wife is always a joy to see and have some fun and laugh with. And my wife here and enjoying everything. It's been great. I've love coming up. That drive up is hell. It's 9 hours and it's not very scenic. You already know about that.
I do.
But nonetheless, and I'm not looking forward to Sunday with the snow showers, but other than that, everything else has been wonderful. Family time is always great and just very thankful and very grateful for all that. So with that, I'll stop babbling. It's after midnight for both of us and I'll let you go.
Yeah, and make sure you give everyone our best.
Oh yeah,
as well.
Yep, but, definitely do that.
Yeah,
same to your family.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's years are getting on there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like kids are getting big. I mean, you saw it firsthand. I mean,
sure.
Yeah. So every year's a blessing. So you just gotta appreciate it. And we'll get back and do this again next Saturday.
My uncle's oldest son talking about going to the gym, and he's talking about you got to keep yourself in shape and whatnot because he's talking about he's getting older. And I'm like, dude, I saw you in diapers. You are not allowed to tell me that you're getting older. Because if you're getting older, that means I'm getting way older.
Right. Yeah, that's no. It's like, yeah, my kids, because I'm old. My kids think I'm really old, so.
All right, it's next Saturday night.
It is. Yeah, I'll be there.
9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern is what we are aiming for next Saturday to recap Week 12 in the NFL and get you ready for Week 13 as the NFL season rolls on. All right, he is Jay, I am Dre. This has been In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you all for listening. See you next Saturday night.